97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. NBA Finals, big one tonight, game number four. Helping break it down, NBA writer for USA Today, Mark Medina, kind enough to carve out a few moments for us. Mark, how are you?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
So, huge game four tonight, obviously with the Phoenix Suns winning games one and two fairly easily, and then Milwaukee in game number three. Do you think Milwaukee figured something out, or will Phoenix kind of right the ship and take a 3-1 advantage after this one?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the challenges, I think both elements will come into play. But what the difference is going to be, that's what makes this series kind of unpredictable and fascinating. I do trust that, you know, the Suns will address some of the low-hanging fruit issues. You know, DeAndre Ayton, I don't think, will get in foul trouble to the same extent that he did in Game 3. I don't think Devin Booker is going to have some shooting struggles. But, you know, it goes beyond that. The Milwaukee Bucks have clearly shifted another gear with Giannis Antetokounmpo having consecutive 40-point-plus games. He's saying that, you know, all things considered, he feels good health-wise. And, you know, guys like Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday are hitting a lot more shots than they were in games one and two. So I think that'll continue. But, you know, I do trust that the Suns will make adjustments, and they've had a good track record of responding to playoff adversity after a loss. So if I had to pick a choice, I think Milwaukee's going to win just because of the momentum, the whole crowd, but, you know, ultimately it will be Phoenix winning the series.
It was funny because Scotty and I were talking back and forth about at some point maybe the moment being too big for Booker or too big for Ayton, you know, guys that haven't been there. But then you look at Milwaukee's side and you're like, wait a second, nobody's been in this NBA Finals position. Is there a guy off either roster that's even been in an NBA Finals?
I think the only guy was Jay Crowder with the Suns. You know, he was with the Miami Heat last year during their championship bubble matchup with the Lakers. You know, the Suns always mention how he's helpful with providing tips, and, you know, he's one of those X-factor players that, for better and for worse, can be relied upon to shoot threes. Sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. But I think, you know, the interesting thing with the Suns is they might not have experience, but I haven't really seen that part playing a factor in terms of, you know, guys being overwhelmed with the moment. I think, you know, any issues that they've had, it's come down to health and availability with Chris Paul, and then, you know, a lot of it's just executional things. So with Devin Booker, for example, there's been times where he's had bad shooting performances. You know, I think against the Clippers, a lot of it had to do with just him adjusting with and without the mask, you know, after he had his nose all messed up from Patrick Beverley. And in game three against the Bucks, a lot of it was just, you know, scheme-oriented. So, you know, I think when how you're going to see this moving forward, a lot of it's just going to be, you know, tactical adjustments and how well do the star players, you know, execute what they do best. So it should be an intriguing one tonight.
Overall, you know, look, I know you've covered the Warriors. I think you've covered the Lakers as well, and those are big, you know, flashy teams. Do you think it matters in the NBA that you've got two small market teams that don't have a lot of flash to them playing for an NBA Finals? Does it hurt the league? Is it a non-story? Where's your stance on that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely different elements here. I think the biggest thing is the NBA likes that there's, you know, more of a feeling that, you know, all teams, big and small, have a shot. It gives them an introduction or an entryway to introduce new stars to a big audience, like a Devin Booker, you know, like a DeAndre Ayton, and kind of these redemption stories with Giannis and Chris Paul. But, you know, there's no way around it. If the Lakers were in the finals this year, I think the ratings would be higher. Because you have a large fan base. You also have a lot of people that don't like the Lakers. They have a lot of people that like LeBron James, a lot of people that don't. And so I think the ratings would have been higher. It has been an increase from the bubble last year, but it's been a decrease from the last few years prior to that. But I think the long-term gains are far more substantial of, you know, the NBA being able to hit different audiences and introduce new stars to those audience, because, you know, let's face it, LeBron James, he's played well, but he's 36 years old. You know, his I don't want to say his days are numbered. I think that he'll come back healthy well next season. But, you know, he only has a few more years left. So the NBA has to, you know, continue to see some of the young talent blossom and become the same kind of marketable presence that some of the old guard was able to do.
Before we move on to the Olympics here a little bit, I want to, and I apologize if you said it and I didn't pick it up, but I want to get your prediction in this series. Who comes out of it and how many games will it take?
Yeah, I was mentioning, I think the Bucks win tonight because they're on their home floor. They got momentum, all that stuff. Role players tend to play better at home. I ultimately think that the Suns will win this series in six. But honestly, you can flip a coin with this, that both teams are really good. And, you know, just given how unpredictable this season has been because of all the unique challenges, you never, unfortunately, rule out any sort of injury coming up or anything like that. But, you know, all things being equal, I think the Bucks will win tonight and the Suns ultimately take us in six games.
Mark Medina, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. So Team USA righted the ship a little bit last night with a win over Argentina, playing the way that we would expect. But going into the Olympics, where's your concern level with this team?
I think it's somewhere in the middle where, you know, you can understand why the U.S. isn't playing its best basketball. You have some of the players not committing because of, you know, injury concerns and just burnout from the season. They haven't had a lot of practice time. But I think even when you account for that, the fact that, you know, a lot of international basketball programs have continued to develop a lot better, you know, the U.S. should be winning these games. I think there is an ability to course correct. I don't think that, you know, like in 2004, I don't think it's an attitude problem or an American arrogance problem. I think a lot of it was just lack of practice time, conditioning, and them just not playing their best game. But, you know, I think that they have to be aware that a lot of these top teams like Spain, and I think Australia, as they experience in the exhibition, like a lot of these programs, A, have established NBA players, but B, they have a lot of continuity where, you know, they're with their international team every single year, whether it's a FIBA tournament, the Olympics. And so that goes a long way with establishing chemistry. So with all that being said, I still think the U.S. ends up in gold, but, you know, it's going to require them to go through the process organically as opposed to just thinking, hey, they can roll the ball out and hoop. That's not how it works.
Obviously losing to Australia, they get another shot at Australia tomorrow night. What do you think? Do you think they come back in grand fashion against Australia, try to show them what they're all about? Or do you think Australia is just a better schemed out team-like system and is going to be able to get them again?
Yeah, I mean, Australia could very well get them again because of what you just said. They have good NBA players. I know Ben Simmons isn't playing right now, but, you know, they have guys like Joe Ingles who's pretty good. I don't think that the U.S. is going to go into this game like trying to get a revenge tour. I think a lot of it is just trying to get their own conditioning up to speed and the chemistry. But I think that these games will be more eye-openers for when the actual competition starts. That, hey, they gotta raise their antenna level up a tad here. But, you know, I think the U.S. will win against Australia next game. But, you know, if they wind up losing, I wouldn't say, hey, this is now a red flag that they're not going to win gold.
The other element too is the fact that, you know, the rest of the United States, or excuse me, the rest of the world is catching up. And I mean, you look at that Australia team, and you know, Matisse Thybulle, a high level defender, and we've seen obviously what Patty Mills can do, and Joe Ingles, and that's a pretty good team. And there's a lot of pretty good teams out there that could cause problems. And it's not necessarily a sign that Team USA is a bad team. It's just the rest of the world's kind of catching up too.
Yeah, and I think the other biggest example is Spain. I mean, the U.S. knows this. I mean, they played against Spain in the gold medal game in 2008, 2012. You know, for all the talk about the redeem team in 2008, you know, it was a close game toward the final minutes. and then Spain wound up getting bronze. You know, they have had so much continuity with both Pau and Marc Gasol, Ricky Rubio playing, Jose Calderon. So it's a really good team, a lot of good connections, a lot of good chemistry. And so there is this feeling like, hey, this is going to be kind of the last run with a lot of these guys. So, again, I think, you know, ever since the 2004 collapse, you know, under Jerry Colangelo, like, the NBA guys, I think, respect international competition and know what it's about. But I think what's going on right now here is that perfect storm of they're caught in this, you know, very challenging year where, you know, some guys haven't committed because they wanted to make sure that it wouldn't hurt their NBA season next season. Guys that have committed, you know, were coming off of, you know, a shortened NBA season. They're trying to recharge from that and all of a sudden rev their engine back up again. So I think that, you know, it has more to do with circumstances than with attitude. But at the same time, you know, they don't have a lot of time to fix these things. And I think that they will be able to do it, but it's going to require work.
What type of contract do you think Mike Conley is going to demand in the offseason? What numbers do you think he'll pull, years and dollar amount?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I think that he can command, you know, maybe in the $15-20 million, but there's also concerns about his injuries here. Now, all that being said, I think with how this applies to the Jazz, I don't think they really have any other choice but to re-sign him. And I know that the Jazz are over the luxury tax and all that, but let's just call a spade a spade. It was just bought by a new owner. Like, he's got money. And the reality is if he doesn't come back, like, they don't all of a sudden have a vacancy that they can fill to the same equivalent because they're over the tax. They only have the mid-level. And so I think it's in their interest because they have Conley's bird rights to just re-sign him and then just look at how some of these things play out. Obviously, the most hopeful scenario is that Conley's health isn't an issue and he can, you know, be more available. But I think, you know, the contingency plans could be seeing what they can get in a trade before the deadline next season. And then just also having him for, you know, almost a plan B of, hey, we can at least bank on him being available for some games so he can help us win games, relieve pressure off of Donovan Mitchell, but then see what else can they get with that mid-level or veterans minimum deals of, you know, gain a decent backup point guard to account for the possibility that, you know, Conley's going to be dealing with injuries here. But I think because of Utah's unique circumstances, it's almost a no-brainer that they should retain him and sign him for whatever they can.
This applies to the Jazz, you know, because, you know, obviously that's the it's kind of on the heels of this conversation, but I guess this is more of just a question in general. If you're an NBA GM and, you know, Justin Zanuck now taking over the reins here with the Jazz, and you had a great regular season, you're the number one seed, best record in the NBA, but you fall short in the semifinals, and there were some glaring weaknesses that the Jazz had in that series that were on display against the Clippers. How do you walk that line between overcompensating and doing too much because you lost a series, but not doing enough because you're like, well, you know, we had some injuries and it may have been different? I mean, it's kind of a hard line to not be overreactionary and try not to scrap everything and rebuild because you lost one playoff series.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Jazz is I don't think it's hard for them philosophically to know what they need to do. I think it's going to be more challenging to pull off what they need to do given the limited spending tools that they have. So what I mean by that, like, yeah, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are your guys. Like, you're not going to blow that up. You retain Mike Conley because there's no better alternative. And then it comes down to the challenge of, like, what can you get with a mid-level exception of $5 million? Who can you draft with the number 30 pick? And so while the needs might be fairly obvious, like they could use more wing depth, they have some, you know, backcourt reinforcements to account for a possible Conley injury again, like those options can be fairly limited because when you're looking at number 30, in the draft, you know, Jimmy Butler is really the only anomaly of, hey, this guy turning into this huge, you know, franchise cornerstone. Usually it's role players, and it usually takes a few years for those guys to develop into a role player. And then with the mid-level, you know, I could see someone like Nicholas Batum, you know, falling under that category. But when you're looking at other, you know, reasonable small forwards on the market, you know, guys like Andre Iguodala and Otto Porter Jr., like, I think they're going to be able to get more than $5 million. So that's the challenge where I think the Jazz are facing. They know what they need to do, but they only have only so many tools to make that work.
What's Klay Thompson going to look like when he gets back to the league?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the worst-case scenario is that he's not there the full season, and he's not the two-way player that he once was, but he's still going to be a serviceable catch-and-shoot player. And then the best-case scenario is he is what he was before he tore the ACL. And no one really knows the answer to that because these injuries are tough with what he's encountered with the ACL and then his Achilles. And I think that there is a feeling that he's not even going to be available to open the season. And once he does come back, you know, the time that he needs to shed off his rust. But even in the worst case scenario, I think that that is enough for the Warriors not to be seen as suddenly a championship contending favorite, but, you know, a team in the Western Conference that is seen as, you know, someone who can be in that mix. Kind of like what we saw this year where, you know, even though the Jazz had the best record, like throughout the season, you always saw, you know, Utah and both LA teams with the Lakers and Clippers and the Denver Nuggets before Jamal Murray's injury and then the Phoenix Suns. Like all those teams, I think, were viewed of, hey, all of them have a decent shot, you know, injuries aside of winning the title. So I would put the Warriors in that category again next season.
Mark, certainly appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the games coming up, and look forward to catching them again sometime down the line.
Thanks so much, Mark.
All right, looking forward to it. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, you got it. Stuff. Mark Medina, USA Today, kind enough to join us, NBA insider.
I love this take on Mike Conley, but it's so hard just to say, oh, hey, go spend it. He said 15 to 20. I kind of feel like it's north of 20, but because I think services of a guy like that is needed, even with the fear of injury. Mike Conley is that everybody saw it. Mike Conley, what he was able to do in catch and shoot, how he evolved into the Jazz system, how all of his numbers improved. I mean, in most major categories, as far as measurable statistics for basketball, he improved. 3-point percentage, had the best he's had in his career, or tied the best. So I think Mike Conley's worth maybe north of 20. What do you think? You think he's right at that 20 mark?
I think he's under.
Mark said 15 to 20.
Well, you know, the great great Gordy Chiesa had a line where he said, there's no bad contract in terms of money. It's only in terms of years. And so I think that's going to be the question is, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, it's me, you know, Ryan Smith's probably listening to me like, well, it's not your money. Why are you talking about this? But you know, if it's a 2-year, $40 million contract, that sucks in terms of your luxury tax, but you can swallow that for 2 years.
That's a no-brainer.
That's a no-brainer.
It's a 3 and 75.
Exactly, or a 3 and 60 where you get that third year and you're like,
yeah.
You know, and so I think what you say to Mike is like, hey, you know what? We'll add years, but we need that money to be less. So let's go 3 years, give you a third year option and go 3 at 12 or 13 per. That keeps you in the league for 3 more years. You end up making, you know, more than a 2 and 20.
So what drops him down to that number? Is it the age and fear of injury? Because it's not his output.
Well, I mean, it's not his output when he's on the court, but you know, you're probably looking at him only playing probably 50 to 60 games next year.
Yeah.
And say, like, look, I, you know.
And hoping that he's there for the
playoffs.
Yeah, potential whatever run it's going to be.
Yeah.
Well, I want to see it. I like the take. I like that he said, look, the Jazz don't have any options. I don't feel like there's a better option out there. I'd actually like to see this run back. I would just like to see Mike Conley healthy when the game is on the line.
Yeah. All right, 11:26, live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. Love these Nissans. Hans, I believe this is a Sentra right in front of you right now. Beautiful color. You walk in and you take a sit in that thing. The tech package is crazy. And these vehicles are really priced to move right now. And they need your used inventory too. So if you've got a used vehicle, it's worth more than pretty much all but the time you drove it off the lot. If you think you're crazy upside down in your ride, you need to bring it by and check it out because they need used inventory badly, which means they're going to offer you more than ever before, and you can flip that into one of these new Nissans and put yourself in a really great situation driving a car you want to drive, that you enjoy driving, and you know is going to be on the road for a long time because it comes with a forever warranty. No cost to you. You can drive it for as long as you want, put as many miles you want on it, and it's covered. Engine goes out. Transmission goes out. After 200,000 miles, doesn't matter. It's covered. And, again, that costs you nothing. It's all right here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. You owe it to yourself to check it out. Tim Daly Nissan in Murray.
The Top 60 and 60 is back on the Zone Sports Network. Get your college football fix every day at 1:30 as the Zone counts you down to the start of the 2021 season by listing off the top 60 players in the state of Utah as voted on by the local media. You'll also hear from the coaches as they talk about the players that will impact their season the most. It's the Top 60 and 60, weekdays at 1:30, presented by Cypress Credit Union and Icon on your home of the best college football coverage in Utah. 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Get those carpets cleaned, 801-288-9376. You call Zero Res right now. They will get you squared away, 801-288-9376. Hands the good. Team USA finally decided to show up.
Yeah. They did. Got a good 108-80 win over Argentina. Argentina's not the team that they were in 2004, but it's still, you know, a decent team. I do have to point this out, though. Nigeria played an exhibition against Argentina and beat them 94-71. So I don't want to read too much into this bounce-back win. They did break the 100 mark. They put up the 108-80 in the, remember, shortened quarters that they play in Olympic play. So that puts them 1-2 in their exhibition games. We talked about this with Mike in this last segment. Their last tune-up game is going to be tomorrow night against Australia. So they get a chance to see Australia again. I don't know how excited they are about that.
Or they could be really excited about that. I hope they're looking at that team and saying, we want round number two with these guys.
And we're going to show you. Mike didn't feel like it was going to be like a payback game, but these guys know each other so well. They all know each other, from Diebold to Baines to Ingles to Exum and on to the other side. I mean, you saw that first little dust-up that Joe Ingles had with, who was it that he got in the dust-up? It wasn't Draymond, was it? No, it was Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
So these guys know each other extremely well. I can imagine that Team U.S. is like, oh, no, we'll show them.
Well, and I've also got to imagine, too, that you know what? Joe Ingles has been chirping in their ear for a full game, and he ended up winning the game. You don't want to deal with him again. I think people are, you know, if you're fired up about Team USA and you're red, white, and blue and everybody else be darned, but you're a Jazz fan, you love Joe Ingles, but now you're getting a taste of what it's like when Joe Ingles is on the other team being the annoying SOB that drives everybody nuts.
Yeah.
And Team USA has got to be – these dudes have got to be getting a little annoyed with him, Patty Mills, who else was causing him all kinds of problems? Oh, Thibel?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this has got to stop. And I'm Kevin Durant. You're Joe Ingles. This can't go on.
I'm Kevin Durant, manned up defensively on Patty Mills. You're not going to blow by me and just get two like that. Like, you would hope that they'd have a little bit of pride. You'd hope they'd take it serious. And you'd hope they'd look at it like, this is our last opportunity to get a sense of team, to feel what we can actually accomplish and do as a team before we head into official Olympic play. So my fingers are crossed that they approach it that way.
If they lose to Australia again, there's any goodwill you got by beating Argentina goes right out the window.
Oh, it's all gone.
And you're 1-3 in exhibitions after only losing two exhibition games in the last 125 years.
Yep.
That might be a bit of an exaggeration, but not much.
Not by a stretch.
Yeah. All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Hey, don't look at me. I'm not offended by this.
I just think it's so funny, man. My former teammate.
You know what? I would say that all the time if I were you.
Oh, man.
My good friend and former teammate,
I have never Peyton been Manning. So embarrassed for Peyton Manning than I was last night. Peyton threw out the opening pitch for the NBA or the MLB All-Star game, and I don't know. Everything about it was just horrible. The windup.
The windup looked weird. He one-hopped it.
What was with the windup?
I don't know. Well, it looked like he was actually trying to bring a little heat, too.
It did, because he brought the ball together in both hands. He brought it up above his head, pretty high above his head. He raised that left leg and got the toe pointed, fired down the mound, and it hit about 12 feet in front of home plate, one hopped about 12 feet, and that catcher had to jump far right in order to extend his glove. It didn't catch it. He just threw his glove and at least batted it down so it didn't hit the backstop.
Why was he throwing out the first pitch anyways?
Because it was in Denver, I guess, maybe.
He played like two seasons there.
Okay.
He's like barely even a Bronco. What are you talking about? There's got to be somebody.
13,
you couldn't 14. Get John Elway?
Actually, was it four seasons?
Did he play four seasons?
Are you
seasons?
Sure?
You know, he started in 2012. They lost to the Ravens in the playoffs. The next year, they got blitzed.
He's not even a Bronco.
The next year, they got blitzed by the Seahawks in the Super Bowl in his second year. The third year, they lost to the Andrew Luck and the Colts in the playoffs, and the fourth year they won the Super Bowl. So, yeah, four years.
Four seasons. Lloyd, he is a Bronco.
But but also, he's actually stayed in Denver. His family lives there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so he's kind of entrenched in that community. It's kind of gave him the middle finger to Indianapolis, and after spending 4 or 5 days in Indy during the NCAA tournament, I totally understand why he gave the middle finger to that city.
You really don't like
Indy? Oh, it was a dive, and the people are... Oof.
Well, you stayed in a Waffle House.
Across the street from
it was
a Waffle
steakhouse.
House.
It was a Waffle House.
No, it was a Waffle House. Hans is right.
It was a Waffle
House. Oh,
wait, house.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was no bueno.
You were in a bad part of town. There's some really good parts of Indy. I was there for 4 years. I loved it. I loved Indy.
Yeah.
Every year. I loved every day of it.
The best day of my trip to Indianapolis was when that plane took off and I looked down and we were heading the other direction.
Gosh, they had that big old banner up there and everything.
No, the NCAA put a lot of lipstick on that pig.
Oh, it's not a pig. It's not a pig, man. Why are you attacking Indy? I really liked Indy.
I've been to a lot of cities. That was the first city where I'm like, I actually am worried about my safety here.
You were not worried about your safety.
I think something bad might happen.
Oh, come on, man. Boise is more violent than Indy.
Oh, Boise's all hopped up on cannabis these days.
I know. It's unbelievable the amount of tie-dye and Tiva.
The hippies have invaded Boise.
It's wild, isn't
it?
Yeah.
It's the new Portland.
It is. And I don't know if that's going to start spreading through up into the panhandle, or if that's going to stay
now,
in the frying pan.
That's probably still meth up there.
Man, you attack that state.
I, Hey, get into the Magic Valley, though. No, nobody makes fun of that.
Was it you that called it Utah's dunce cap? That was horrible.
I did not do that. That's my home state. Did. I wouldn't do that.
I don't remember who it was. But some, so Peyton Manning one-hopped it about 12 feet in front of the plate. It was completely embarrassing.
Just get it across the plate.
What's going on? Is he – I mean –
Well, we all saw him play his final year in the NFL, especially that last stretch, and not really surprised.
The arm's really gone noodle, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's really gone noodle.
I remember reading a story. Somebody asked Eli, what's the one thing about you and Peyton that nobody else knows? Or what's something that people would be surprised? And he said, we're not great athletes. So we're just not. Like, we throw a football really well.
Yeah, but they
as far as, like, a true athlete, he's like, we're not good.
Do you know every time Peyton took off out of the pocket running in practice, do you know the entire team would start laughing? We'd all just sit there and laugh. He should be El Pato. Like, because you just sit there like, that is horribly awkward and uncomfortable, and even he would walk back to the huddle with this big smile like, yeah, I know. What do you expect? He's a terrible athlete. I promise you, Tim Tebow wouldn't have one-hopped it.
No, I agree with that.
Tim Tebow would put it right across the plate.
Tim Tebow would just have to be on the camera again.
Tim Tebow would be so great. He would throw it, save a widow from a fire, and then still make it in time to catch it.
He would have made the All-Star game about him is what he would have done.
Hey, but Lloyd and Scotty, I want you both to admit that Tim Tebow is more of a Bronco than Peyton Manning is.
Whoa. Oh,
I'll agree with that, actually.
How would you – how
Broncos
do you go,
are, Broncos
how do you
drafted
that?
Him.
Broncos
He's
drafted
way
him.
More.
He spent his entire career.
Yes.
That's not true.
Well.
Got traded, played for the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
Went
no,
to
that
the,
was where he was
Patriots.
Just trying to hang on. His career was over.
Hey, by the way, watch this. Watch this slide from Peyton after getting out of the pocket. Pump fake and...
Oh, did he hurt himself? Peyton went to slide and his knees stuck in the ground and he rolled. Oh, man. Every time I see it, I mean, the NFL was really difficult. I hated camp and I, for the most part, I really didn't like the NFL. But, man, I loved Peyton. He brought a lot of fun to practice. Just him being him. The thing is, you screwed up in practice, and you had to come back to huddle.
He'd tear you up pretty
oh,
good.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. And where I was a defensive lineman switching over to offensive line.
I'm sure he gave you a ton of flexibility in realizing that. And said, it's a long learning curve. We'll get him up to
No. He would say, you know, you probably ought to not take your paycheck this week. Like, and it's like, I made one mistake, man. He was so much fun.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But
by the way, I told my 10-year-old, who obviously loves Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And I told him that you had a pair of boots from Peyton.
Yeah.
And he wants to play poker against you for a chance to win those boots.
No, man, I played poker as that kid at the last company party.
Yeah.
And he torched me. He's got a little poker face.
Oh, he's funny. All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
And, of course, the ugly.
Right, we are on the ugly, and this is a nasty ugly as story breaking earlier this morning. And I'll just read some of the highlights from the ESPN story. But Richard Sherman, a longtime Seattle Seahawk, now with the San Francisco 49ers, was arrested this morning and booked at 6:08 a.m. local time in Seattle, being investigated for burglary, domestic violence. Records say he was denied bail. There was a 911 call at that residence at 2 a.m. The person calling said an adult male family member who did not live at the residence was trying to force his way into the home. When police arrived, the suspect was outside the home. He fought with police, but was eventually apprehended and taken into a local hospital to be checked. After he was cleared medically, was booked into the King County Correctional Facility. A spokesman said no one at the residence was injured. But there's two things. Obviously, number one, trying to break into the home. And then number two, fighting with police. And they don't give any details as to what the level of fighting was with police. But that's never good when you're picking fights with the police when they show up to try to put you into custody and at least try to see what's going on. But this does not look good for Richard Sherman, who's been selected to 5 Pro Bowls and a three-time first-team All-Pro in 10 NFL seasons.
So they still haven't posted a bail on him?
He's been denied bail. Now,
when do you ever hear that?
Well, the Seattle Police Department did tell ESPN that it is actually standard procedure for suspects of domestic violence to be denied bail until they can appear before a judge.
Oh, okay.
So it sounds like that they're like, oh, okay, this is a domestic violence. We just don't want him to write a check and walk out of here. We want to make sure he sees a judge first. So apparently this is standard procedure for domestic violence.
This sounds, it seems so strange to me. I don't know what to make of this because I know Richard Sherman seems a bit off the wall. He's a complete intellect, a Stanford graduate. He's there's always an angle with Richard. There's
yep.
always a reason and an angle. Everything feels so calculated with him that this is beyond me, the understanding of this. I can't wait to see this thing play out just to better understand, well, what happened here? Because this is as baffling as any professional athlete crime I've ever read about. And I know that this news is just breaking, as Scotty mentioned, but this is so bizarre.
The wording is bizarre until I saw a tweet from some law professor who said burglary domestic violence means that it doesn't mean that there was a break-in to steal something. It was an attempted break-in to commit a crime. And so he may not have broken in to commit domestic violence, but the belief was he was attempting to break in to commit domestic violence.
Oh, man, it's so far beyond me. Somebody in his position would lower himself to something so despicable.
But understand that more details are certainly going to come out on this before it's all, but you, here in the next, I'm sure, by the end of the day or early tomorrow, we'll have far more details on what was going on here.
And Richard being the spokesperson he is, I'm sure we'll hear from Richard shortly.
Yeah. Because
he's the kind of guy that I could see him wanting to defend himself in court. Like, no, I don't need an attorney.
And he could probably pull it off, too.
Yeah. He's very convincing.
Convincing, charismatic.
Mm-hmm. I know he's one of the more hated players in the NFL. He's been one of my favorites. He's always been an entertainer to me.
Obviously obnoxious and kind of a hype man for himself and for his team. But he's always seemed to be able to back it up. And he's one of those guys where it always seems like he needs that element to it to perform well. Like, he needs to go out there and let everybody know that he's the best and set that standard for himself so that he can go out and live up to it. And for the most part in his career, it's worked out for him. All right. Hans and Scotty here on the Zone Sports Network. It is a Wednesday, which means it's time to give away some tickets.
This is your chance to win tickets.
Win.
It's a Win Ticket Wednesday. Caller number 12 right now at 855-340-ZONE.
Woo!
And you'll win tickets right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Win Ticket Wednesday here on the Zone Sports Network as the Salt Lake Bees will start a 6-game homestand against the Las Vegas Aviators. Coming up on Thursday, July 23rd through the 27th, come out and support the Bees. It's better at the ballpark. Tickets are on sale now, and if you are caller number 12 right now at 855-340-ZONE, you will win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Bees against the Aviators on Friday, July 23rd. Caller number 12 right now, again, 855-340-ZONE. Whole World News coming up next. This is Hans and Scotty here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is DJ and PK.
joined now by Steve Cleveland. The Bucks blasting Phoenix in Game 3. Is this the beginning of the end for the Suns? Have the Bucks figured him out and Giannis has back-to-back 40-point games and he's unstoppable? Which way are you leaning right now?
There's a lot of things that the Bucks did that would indicate that they have the capacity and capability of taking this to 7 games. And that's just on one game. But if you were to ask me after watching that game and look at the things that they did, the adjustments that the Bucks made, I don't see this thing being done in 5. This goes 7 games. And I don't see any reason why they won't. They're going to play another game at home, but the Suns will come back. They'll play better, but I don't think Suns can beat them in Milwaukee.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands.
It is time for another edition of Whole World News. By the way, David Locke will join us coming up in about 10 minutes from right now, right here on the Zone Sports Network.
Okay, what would you rather have? Taco Bell employees gone wild or a criminal, or potentially the world's dumbest criminal?
I don't know. I got to go Taco Bell.
Okay, this is really a good one. So the shift manager is 25 years old, and I guess she's young and she's a little
bit
rowdy.
Same person sent you to Toronto?
No.
She's young, rowdy, gives bad directions.
Know something about international travel?
No, this is not the Taco Bell manager that says, head up to Canada.
Has a propensity to start an international border crisis.
She's same just one, sending right? customers trying to send them into Canada.
You guys, Toronto's the best. You should go.
No, this is not the same one. This is a different one that is currently in jail.
Oh.
So her and I guess the other employees in Taco Bell just got fed up. It was July 5th, the day after 4th of July. They had all these fireworks that they weren't able to fire off. And one of the employees brought them to the Taco Bell. Well, the shift manager's like, screw it, go lock those doors. And they decided to go in the bathrooms and launch fireworks. So
inside. Now, it is a Taco Bell, so I imagine there's been a few bombs dropped in those bathrooms. But with that said, you can't be taking fireworks and lighting them off inside.
Slow clap him up, Lloyd. Slow clap him up. Hold on. Let's go. He's sitting in that bathroom, like getting Roman candles. Like, this is easy.
That's all you got?
I'll take this Roman candle any day.
I had a Leroy who just had a 7-layer and a chalupa, and I haven't been the same since.
Did you hear that Newton story about the guy that went into the, it was into like a Home Depot?
Yeah, Home Depot goes, I'm
fixing to drop
you
bombs.
Guys, you guys need to clear out of here because I'm about to drop a bomb.
They shut the whole thing down.
They thought it was a terrorist attack or terrorist threat.
Oh, I'm dying. So anyway, Scotty, so they locked the door so nobody can come in. Not just to the bathroom. I'm talking into the Taco Bell.
Yeah.
And they let some off in the, and they've got video proof of all this, but they haven't.
So the cameras were running.
Yeah, they haven't released the video proof. They came into the main sitting area and launched some, just in the main sitting area. Well, one of the they put some fireworks in the garbage can and it exploded and lit on fire. So they tried to rush it out the door, and as they rushed out the door opened and shut behind them and locked them all out. And there was a fire in the Taco Bell. There was a
Wait
fire
a minute.
The in
other
the Taco
story
Bell.
Was about the world's dumbest criminals, because I think we got these guys are yeah. giving a run for their money here.
Oh, man. Well, she's been arrested, and fire caused more than $30,000 worth of damage. So Ooh. She's now being held on felony aggravated arson. And that sets a $5,000 bond, and that is a felony charge. And she is in a lot of trouble. So are the other employees that were lighting off the fireworks. And I guess the worst part, though, was that the door locked behind them and it shut a fire that had started in the Taco Bell. It had shut locked them out of that. The fire department had to come and bust the door down and get in and extinguish the fire. Oh, man, that is nuts. You know, I've been bored at jobs. Like, I've had some jobs. That's where I learned how to balance stuff on my chin, just out of boredom.
Yep.
But I don't know if I was a manager at a Taco Bell, if I'd ever be like, let's go.
Hey, let's light these off in the bathroom and inside the store. What? How do you think that's going to end for you?
I don't know.
Not well.
It ended in an arrest for her.
As it should.
Yeah, handcuffed and taken downtown. This was in Nashville, Tennessee, by the way. You know, it's so funny because I know we all make fun of fast food, but I eat fast food because I like it. It's
same. Absolutely.
And every time I get a teenager handing me a bag of food, I'm like, it's a bad decision. It's a really bad decision because I don't know what – this guy's laughing about something.
Yeah.
And, you know, these other two teenagers back there on the grill throwing together my burrito, they're laughing about something. What are they laughing about? And how competent are they to put together a seven-layer? Not very.
Oh, I'm sure they're more than competent to do it and do it right.
I hope.
With sanitary conditions in the
room. I hope they're not storing the meat on the floor.
Hands of Scotty. Here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We are live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. Hey, Rich and the crew ready to help you out. Let's say you're upside down in a vehicle and you think nobody's going to want my used car. Well, guess what? You're wrong. They do. They desperately need your used car, and they will give you more for it. And there's, in fact, some people who just bought a vehicle maybe 7-8 months ago, they actually have equity in their car right now. That's not a word you use very often, and their vehicle is appreciating. Your vehicle is appreciating right now. So come down, trade it in, and get into one of these new models like a Titan at 0% financing. We've got a Rogue in front of us right now that's an absolutely beautiful ride. You can take advantage of it right now by coming down here, flipping your car into a vehicle that's going to be on the road for a long time because it comes with a forever warranty. So it's a win-win. Let's go. Tim Daly Nissan and Murray, and again, Megan's put out a ton of jazz gear as well. So you've got jazz shirts, jazz hats, whatever you want. Come down, grab a piece of clothing, and get yourself a new ride. It's all right here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray. David Locke joins us next right here on the Zone Sports Network.